Hello and welcome.
Bienvenido.
你好.
And assalamu alaikum.
Welcome to AO Access to Success,
the podcast series developed by the AO Access Task Forces
to broaden your perspectives
for personal and professional development.
Today's podcast is hosted by Tatiana Topolovich, Senior Program Manager, Diversity, Inclusion and Mentorship.
Welcome to today's podcast, where we will be discussing the generational differences between younger healthcare professionals and the senior surgeon generation, and the pitfalls and possibilities that come with it. We aim to explore how these differences might influence the future of healthcare and how we can create more equal access to the field and the profession. Joining me today is Franziska Altofer, who will help delve us into these important topics. Franziska is an aspiring spine surgeon, 31 years old, and is a co-founder of the AO Spine Youth Club. She just returned from a fellowship in New York, back to Switzerland, where she works at the Balgrist University Hospital in Zurich. Franziska, welcome. I would like to start asking you about the AO Spine Youth Club and how you came about setting this up.
Thanks, Tatiana, for having me. I'd like to share about the Youth Club. So the AO Spine Youth Club has just been founded very recently in October last year with one of my co-fellows in New York, whose name is Gisberto Evangelisti, and one of another colleague of ours in Spain, Victor Martin Gorgojo. And we wanted to create an easy access to AO where early career surgeons feel comfortable and can connect easily with like-minded people without any pressure or feeling inexperienced, just to connect from a very early on stage in their career.
So that sounds like there was a need to really exchange with other aspiring spine surgeons, and there was a bit of a barrier to the network of AO. Is that a good assumption?
Yes, I think you can put it like that, because when you are like a very early career surgeon, you obviously want to connect with senior surgeons, but they are very senior to you when you imagine you just come from med school and you are like admiring them because they know so much and you feel like you know so little. So sometimes you are at a congress and you don't know anybody because the only people you know in the field are your co-residents, but you know nobody from somewhere else. So you have to be very brave to walk up to someone who is like so respected and senior. So in the end, you end up being very lonely at conferences and a little confused, and you see other young people standing around feeling the same. So yeah, there was somehow a need. And also we saw that people joined this club because we did it over social media, that people asked us, what is AO? They just joined the club, but they did not know what AO is. So I think this is where we really like hit the nail on the head. So we're very happy.
That's great. And any achievements since you established this in October 23, I think, that you could share with the audience and how they can get involved?
Oh, yes. So, I mean, we achieved a lot. First, we achieved that people talk about it, which is great, because in the beginning, it was just the three of us having random ideas. So now we have 150 members from all over the world, Africa, Asia, America. Also that we have a diverse population. We have people who are female young surgeons, male young surgeons. We have parents. We have people who do spine surgery as their second career or are still in residency. And as I mentioned, they have multiple languages from very different cultures, and it's very that we can connect this easily. So we are very proud of that.
Yeah, that truly sounds amazing. You've come a long way in a rather short time. And I love, of course, all the diversity dimensions that you're attracting to the group. And we look forward to hearing more. So taking this a step further and talking about age as a diversity dimension, how do you think younger healthcare professionals differ, if they differ at all, from the senior surgeon generation?
I mean, that is a very delicate topic, and it's also a hot topic at the same time, because I think not only in medicine or spine surgery, there is always a generation gap. And this is also just a reflection of society. I think a huge difference we see between early career surgeons and senior surgeons is the different understanding of the terms diversity, work-life balance. So maybe when I can dive into the topic, let's say diversity, I think for us, the early career surgeon, we are all being raised with the mindset that everybody can achieve anything, and it does not really differ what gender you have or what nationality you have. If you're lucky to be born, obviously, in an area where you get all the opportunities. So when we go to med school, for example, there's 60% female, and nobody ever like doubts, oh, why are you female in med school? So I think this is how we've been raised, and that we do not like really flag people based on their gender or ethnicity, which is obviously a great achievement of society, not only in spine surgery or medicine. However, I think there might be a generational misunderstanding of how to be inclusive, especially of all genders. So, I mean, we see that there's a lot of effort in promoting women in spine surgery when we talk about the gender topic. And also the senior surgeons see, okay, we want to treat them equally, we want to feel them welcome, we want to give them all the chances, which is great. However, this sometimes leads to some misunderstanding, because this younger generation, my generation, we don't see ourselves as specifically female surgeons or surgeons with a different gender. We just see us as surgeons who work hard like the others. Of course, there are some biological differences, and we are very proud of whatever we achieve. And also we are proud that we're women who achieve something. But in the end, we don't want to be flagged as, oh, this is a female spine surgeon. We just want to be flagged as a successful spine surgeon. They want to be like seen for their achievements rather than for their achievement they did in their gender. So I think that is not coming from a bad mindset. It's just a generational misunderstanding. Also, I think it's confusing to the male surgeons, because since they grew up, they say, okay, I have two other female students who are in my study group at university. And certainly then after you are in residency, you see they get treated differently, maybe also bad, but then you see they get benefits just because they're female. And this is confusing to you, because you've been taught your whole career or your whole education that everybody is the same. So I think that is also confusing to them. Nobody wants to be mean or something. It's just a misunderstanding, I think.
Yeah, I think parts of what you just referred to last is maybe a bias, and most of our biases are unconscious. And I could definitely agree that the majority of people have no bad intentions, but are driven by backgrounds, context, and of course, biases. What I really like and what we strive for in AO Access is We try to be inclusive of all diversity dimensions, like you said, from gender to ethnicity to age, religious background, socioeconomic status, etc. And also when we do work with Access, we often end up talking about gender, which is just one diversity dimension. And a person is not just a man or a woman. We have what is called intersectionality. We have so many different parts of our identities that make a person. It's not fair to flag out that one difference. And I think there are spaces where, for example, you know, a few years ago, there was a need for groups that are focused on women, for example. But if we look at creating more equal access for all, then an ideal would be an environment where different diversity dimensions can intersect with the topics we're trying to promote.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic that we feel that we are not treated because of one of these dimensions. That is an achievement of the generations before us and the hard work everybody put in before us. So we know we are very privileged and grateful for that.
Yes, and I think just to add to that, we speak from a European perspective, just as a disclaimer, to position ourselves as well, because even from my generation, I think I cannot say that we all grew up equally. And so different generations, different regions will disagree with this statement, I think, which is fair. I also grew up in a different environment. But in an ideal case, we are seen for what we are competent at.
Yeah, and I mean, of course, this is not true for everybody. It's not that you do not experience any difference because of your dimensions, let's say female or ethnicity or height or social economic status. Of course, you experience some differences, but I just wanted to point out that that is not something that defines us. It's one dimension only. So it's a very difficult topic. And you don't want to step on anybody's toes because in the end, everybody's experience is individual. But that's just something that we experience in our community, that we feel we are equal. And also the young male surgeons, when we do an event, they say like, should we do a happy Women's Day? And they want to show like how inclusive they are. And then we women say like, well, let's just leave that away because we don't do a happy Men's Day either. So this is just like the discussions we are having, and it's not black and white. Again, it's just interesting that everybody is like really, really trying to be so inclusive that sometimes it gets just like a little confusing for everybody. But everybody's coming from a very friendly standpoint.
So, Franziska, any other areas that you could share with us where you see differences between younger and more experienced surgeons?
Yes, so I think one hot topic is the term work-life balance, which leads to a lot of disagreement, especially between younger and more senior surgeons. I mean, if we see outside of medicine, many people work part-time, even if they don't like have children to take care of because they just prefer to work part-time. But it is very rare in spine surgery. And often the term work-life balance, I think, is misunderstood as laziness, meaning that people either say they work or they live a life, whereas medicine is something which we do not consider like as a job only. It's like a profession with a lot of passion. So I think that sometimes might be misunderstood that the younger generation just sees it like as an office job that you needs to be done and you don't really love it, which is not true because I see in our community people are obsessed with spine surgery and they love it very, very much. But I think what we saw in our generation very early on is that we are a very privileged generation. The generations before us, they put in a lot of work, that we can get very good education, that we feel that we are treated all the same. And we learned that we can become whatever we want since we have very nice parents who worked very hard and wanted to make everything possible for us. We also saw, on the other hand, what our parents sacrificed, especially that people were working very, very hard, never seeing their children. And this is also what we see that they regret at the end of their career, where normally our parents are at. So since we know that we are such a privileged generation, we saw that we need maybe to consider other things at the little earlier time point than the generation before us was able to, because it was just a totally different time, a totally different setting. And now everybody is looking for qualified people. So we see that and we know that. And I think we just start to consider our time a lot earlier in our career than maybe the generation before us did. And then when we look at the people who are now in med school, we see that they're even more considerate of their time than our community. We are already old again in comparison to what's coming next, obviously. Considering what you do with your time and your life becomes more and more important. I think this is why work-life balance gets a little misunderstood, because people think if you don't want to work, you live your life outside of work, which is not true. We love our work, and we also spend so much spare time or free time or weekends for our work because we love it. But then it's sometimes just misunderstood as laziness because we are just very considerate with our time. It's never to insult the work of the senior surgeons and the hard work they put in. It's more something that we wanted to show that we learned a lesson from the generation before us. I think it's more that. Also reflects a little in communication itself. So when we see the generation again of our parents or senior surgeons, they were educated in a very rough environment. And maybe they got some inappropriate feedback or no feedback at all or no encouragement. And we are raised in a much softer approach at home as well as at work. So sometimes the more senior generation thinks we are a little soft, but we were raised by them softer, I think, also based on the lesson they learned. And I think that we are maybe not as hardworking and we are not as endurable as they are. Maybe that's true, but I think it goes back to the time we want to spend on this planet and be more considerate about it. That is something that sometimes makes a gap between senior and junior surgeons, which is not necessary.
Thank you. I mean, that's a great learning for the various generations. Is there something like a strategy that you developed that worked for you and maybe that you discussed with your colleagues that worked for them to approach such a potentially difficult conversation or situation?
Well, yeah, I do not have the recipe, of course, because that's not only in spine surgery. I think that's, again, in every industry a topic. In my work situation, I'm very lucky because my chiefs that I had were always like very supportive and also like not that old school, let's say. But maybe this is just an environment you choose. And maybe this is also something you have to choose when you decide to where you do residency, that you also consider not only is this a prestigious hospital, what can I learn, but also is this an environment where I fit in with the needs I have and where I feel heard. But in the end, I think it's always important wherever you are that you just put in first a lot of hard work before you ask for any privileges or understanding. So I think that's sometimes also from the younger generation, maybe we are not that patient. I mean, we get everything very fast. We want to have everything right now because we get everything right now when we go grocery shopping or whatever. We never have to wait. So in your career, sometimes you have to wait a little longer and have to endure a little longer until you can ask for something. I think that's also something that a junior surgeon has to consider before like asking. Because in the end, you ask someone who did a very, very much hard work and spent a lot of time in the hospital and also spends a lot of time in educating you. So you have to be like respectful to their input as well before you ask for something that they might not understand initially, and then they might feel like offended or put off. So look for the environment you feel like you can grow in, and then work hard, and then you can ask for some benefits, I hope. Yes.
No, I think this is great because I think that's what you can read and find in the data and published research. It's really important for organizations to adapt in order to attract the diverse talent that is out there, because the needs are changing. The needs are changing from a patient population, from a health disparities perspective, and of course from the newly graduating medical students or healthcare professionals. So I think for organizations to really be aware of these new or slightly changing needs is a really important point, just as you said, for let's say the younger generations to be a bit more reflective on their own, in this case, patients or not. So these differences in communication or different generations with different attitudes, have you observed how this affects patient care?
So I think we can all agree that the senior surgeons are our mentors and leaders, and they are for us the best healthcare providers for every patient. All of us junior surgeons would not be able to pursue any career without the senior surgeons, since they have all the knowledge that we need to learn. That also includes how to treat patients, how to provide the best care for each patient. So the years of experience they have, it gives them so much more information by seeing a patient as an individual. there's so many dimensions they include when they decide on how to treat them and what's the best plan, that ends up like in this gut feeling that the senior surgeons have. So really, experience is key here. Yeah, we can only learn and put in a lot of time and hard work to become as good in patient treatment as our leaders are. I mean, there has been a study recently, I think in The Economist, that showed that female surgeons have less complication than male because they're probably tend to be less risky. But that's like the only thing that I know about like data. Something that's confusing for senior generations is like someone who's transgender. I think to us, it's like, okay, they're transgender. So we don't really care that they're transgender. It's just a thing. Whereas I think for like the older generation, that might be confusing. But I don't see like that they would treat them differently or something. I haven't seen like in the end that many hospitals. I just work in 3-4 hospitals. So maybe it depends really on the culture of the hospital. You know, there are some hospitals where people, like, as soon as you leave the patient's room, they say, like, oh, again, someone who does not want to work or whatever. But I used to work in one of these hospitals and I did not like it. But the hospitals that since then I've been working at, this is like a no-go. You never talk badly about the patient ever. So I think that's really a culture thing of the hospital. But I think that in many hospitals, it's still like that, that people just go out and talk and judge the patient based on whatever. And that's also something that youngers take up because they want to be like cool and get along and make the jokes. But it's that's something I really like in the hospitals I worked the last few years, because you never talk bad about the patient ever. Even when you're in a bar or something, you just don't.
Yeah. So, Franziska, we've talked now about what individuals can do. Is there anything in terms of strategies for healthcare institutions to bring in a more, let's say, systematic way, you know, a culture that fosters diversity and exchange, inclusive exchanges between everyone involved? Is there something that you've come across that worked or didn't work?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think what I saw, what worked well, even though it goes back to the individual basis, because in the end, we are always dealing with individuals. It's just when someone has like an open mindset and you look for an open communication, both sides, and don't feel offended or be like put off very fast or just draw fast conclusions, but just like being open-minded and talking with individuals what they need and what they really prioritize. But I think in the end, it's very important that everybody is open in their communication. For example, what we see often is that junior surgeons say that they want to do, let's say, a lot of research because they know senior surgeons want to obviously promote academic careers and they want to support people who pursue an academic career. And then junior surgeons say, yeah, I want to do that, just that they get promotions and more support. And then in the end, they don't really want to do that. And you get the sensation. And that's like not a really open communication. And that also leads to some misunderstandings and maybe disappointment on both sides because one has not been fully honest. So I think an open communication on both sides is very critical. And if you have just a flexible mindset in thinking, who can do a job, how can a job be done, and how can a career be designed, you can like achieve a lot and be inclusive. Because whatever we think is inclusive now is probably in 5 years not inclusive anymore. So whatever strategy you try to design now, I think in the end, it's a mindset of just being open and flexible on both sides, and junior surgeons not feeling like entitled to something without being flexible on their side, because in the end, it's always a compromise. So I think that's what I saw works best when you are holding back in the beginning, observe how is the institution working, what is important, where can I contribute? Where do I really enjoy doing things? And I just don't do stuff because I think it has to be done. And would put me in a better spotlight, but being like very honest about what you do and why you do it, that leads also to trust, and trust leads also, I think, to flexibility, because when people trust you, they know they can rely on you, even if you do something they might have not thought of yet, but they trust you. So I think in the end, it's open communication, building trust, and being flexible, because then you can always like evolve with time and the new challenges, as you do in surgery too. You always evolve all the time. So why not how you communicate with your coworkers? And that's the things I saw worked in the institutions I've been working at so far.
Yeah, I love your point that it's individuals and their contributions that make up the organization. And at the same time, I think it's the organization and the leadership then that can foster this kind of open communication, inclusive environment where, you know, you can make mistakes. And, you know, you mentioned this flexibility where there is not just one way to do the things, but, you know, several ways how to offer best patient care in the end, and continuously learning. So to wrap up the podcast, is there some concrete steps that can somehow ensure that younger professionals, maybe specifically from underrepresented backgrounds and not just referring to gender as discussed earlier, what steps can be taken to make the field of orthopedic surgery more accessible or more equal in terms of access for everyone who wants to be or become a surgeon?
Well, that's a difficult question, I would say. I mean, specific steps is very difficult to say, because in the end, it's just the style of leadership, and the style of leadership is something very individual. But of course, you need role models, because in the end, you feel attracted by role models, because you can see yourself, or you think like, oh, this is how I would like to be one day. So the diverser the role models become, not only in physical attributes, but also in their mindset and how you see how they design jobs for people who work for them, I think that is what makes it more attractive in the end.
Franziska, thank you very much for joining us on this podcast and to contribute to AO Access and making AO and society a more equal place. I think you mentioned earlier that much of the changes needed or fostered in orthopedic surgery are reflected also in the societies we live, and hence are part of larger societal changes that will develop with or without us. And the more we can co-create, I think the more inclusive the environments will be. So thank you so much for your time and energy and highlighting the importance of how to bridge the generational differences and creating a more inclusive and equitable environment for everyone.
Thank you very much, Tatiana, for inviting me and the AO Spine Youth Club. It was a real pleasure, and we're looking forward to meeting all early career surgeons that listen to this podcast. Join us on social media.
Thank you for listening to the AO Access to Success podcast series.
Be sure to visit our webpage to facilitate your personal and professional development
by exploring dimensions of leadership at AO Foundation. Who we are, about AO Access.
To join the conversation.